to the Tulsa Music Stream. And now, your host, Scott and Jana Squires. You want the dirt? You've got it.
Hey guys, I'm Scott Squires, and this is the Tulsa Music Stream. This Hello. Is Jana right here.
Hello.
Jana Squires.
Good evening.
This is episode 114. Imagine that, man. 114.
It's crazy. Already.
We'll be joining with Kix guitar player, also Rhino Bucket, Brian Forsythe. And if you could you please share our stream on your favorite pages, your favorite groups, whatever, on Facebook. We're also on YouTube, where you can share that if you wish. Hit subscribe on YouTube, the notification bell, and of course, you know, subscribe. Also, we're on Twitter, which is now X, and we're on Twitch, and we're also on podcast platforms, Spotify, iHeart, Amazon, and so many more. And you can also check out our shorts on YouTube, and we're also on TikTok and Instagram.
And as we always say, you guys are a very important part of the show. That's why we go live, so we can see you guys in the chat room and say hello. You can participate, asking questions, leaving comments for our guests or for us. So we've got the chat screen pulled up here. Let's give a shout out to Leslie. Thank you for always being here, Leslie. Tracy, same for you. You guys are faithfully in here all the time. We appreciate your support. Thank you guys again for liking and sharing the stream with all your friends. As we told you guys last episode, we are now sponsor free, which means that we keep the engine running by the goodness, by our own contributions, and then by the goodness of our viewers as well. If you guys feel so led to donate to us, we are at Cash App, $ Tulsa Music Stream. Hey, Don, good evening. Miss coming out to see y'all. Well, we miss seeing your face, but we hope you're doing well. It's good to see you in here tonight. And we're going to just kill a little bit of time while we wait for Brian to get in here. One thing I wanted to tell you guys about, I just mentioned, that we're sponsor-free, but that we rely on donations. We got the nicest, most generous donation from this gentleman. I'm going to put him up here on the screen. And I want all the area bands and artists to know about this guy. He's such a good guy. He's a fantastic sound guy. He really likes the stream. He gave us a very generous donation the other day. I want to make sure that all of you bands and artists out there watching are aware that he is available for hire. If you guys are needing sound at any of your gigs, he does sound for Rocket Science for our club gigs. And the guy is stellar. He's got stellar equipment. He's got a great ear, and he's got the best work ethic and best attitude. He's so fun and pleasant to work with. So please, if you have sound needs, bands and artists, contact Swan Sound. His name is Steve Swanson. Give him a call at that number there on the screen, 507-319-3605, or you can email swan, that's S-W-A-N-S-T, 63@gmail.com for rates and availability. And as it says there, TMS proudly endorses Swan Sound. We really do. He's just, I can't speak highly enough of him. We've gone through some sound man transitions. Everyone we've worked with has been amazing and has sweated a lot of sweat for our band. They've put out a lot of work and a lot of great sound for us. And Steve is the current sound guy for us, and he just does a great job. So make sure you reach out to him if you guys need sound for your band, or if you're a solo artist and you need some sound, get with him and he will take good care of you. So we're awaiting Brian's arrival. It's just now 6, so if he comes in, he's still on time right now. I want to ask you, as long as I've known you, you've always been a big fan of Kix. Now, I'm a few years younger than you. You're kind of more of a Midnight Dynamite guy. I was the Blow My Fuse fan. But I like all of it. He's coming
in
right now.
Well, they were right next to each other, so I was a fan of both those.
Right.
But it started with me with Midnight Dynamite, for sure.
For sure.
But hey.
He has joined us. Brian, can you hear us okay?
We already did in our intro.
Yeah. we're talking you up big time. I want to make sure you can hear and see us all right. I'm going to put you on the split screen. Does everything look and sound good to you?
Yeah.
Fantastic, man. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight here on Tulsa Music Stream. We're so excited to get into the conversation with you. We're absolutely 100% going to get into lots of talk about Kix, and congratulations to you on such an amazing career that you wrapped up with those guys about a year ago. We're going to get into that. But I did want to start off our conversation with you tonight to find out what's going on with Rhino Bucket. Now, we were doing research on you guys and looking up what's going on right now, and it looks like you guys are going to be playing the Monsters of Rock Cruise in March. Yep. Which we have a lot of you guys on the show who get to play this thing, and everybody tells us how fun it is. Tell us what your experience of doing this cruise is like and how fun it is for you.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because, Kix did it right, the first year that they started that. And I remember the first time I was a little kind of leery of being on a cruise ship, because I'd never even been on a cruise ship. And I couldn't imagine how it was going to be. And it actually, when it first started, it was, you get like swamped with fans. But the longer it's run, like they're used to seeing you around, so they don't bug you so much. But yeah. They treat you with respect, like if you're eating or something. But I personally, after that initial first time, I got used to it real fast, and it's just it's a lot of fun, because usually there's two shows involved over the course of 5 days, and the rest of the time, you just can go anywhere you want and see a band, or it's really cool, and they have jam sessions and all kinds of stuff.
I don't think people get much sleep on that thing, but hopefully that's a time for you not only to connect with your fans, but also to get some good hang time in with some of your friends in other bands where maybe you haven't seen them a while, and you guys can get caught up out there on the boat.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And of course, you have to get your sea legs under. Is it there like a drink or something that they sell, for people who get like seasick and stuff?
Oh, who knows?
What is it? You used to take it when we'd play.
Oh, well, it's not a drink. It's like, it's called Dramamine. It's like some kind of little supplement or pill or something you take. But yeah, some of us need that.
They wear those little patches too.
That's right. Well, so I wanted to so we talk about that day, and I know you guys also just did you did the Rocktober 2024 earlier in September, and what a star-studded lineup that is. So tell us, do you guys have more Rhino Bucket dates on the docket for 2025, and can we expect to see those announced pretty soon?
Well, actually, we just got a new agent. Out of Minneapolis, and he's working on it right now. He's got two tentative dates already for 2025.
Great.
And he's planning on filling in the calendar.
Okay, that's fantastic. Well, that's good news. And then again, as I'm researching you, I went to the website. I think you guys were planning originally to try to put out new music back in 22, and then I noticed the website had that crossed through and there were question marks. So what's going on with new music from Rhino Bucket?
I mean, every time we put out a record, it takes forever. the problem is, we're all kind of spread out, especially me. I'm all the way over here in Nashville, and they're out in LA or around LA, but George has sent a couple song ideas, but that's as far as it's gone.
Okay.
He was working on a batch of songs with Greg, the old guitar player, but for some reason that didn't work out.
Okay, well, we'll keep our eyes peeled for that and for the new dates coming out as well.
We were fortunate enough to, both her and I, to open up for Rhino Bucket. Actually, we did this J-Pot for Rocklahoma 2007, And I think you had a tour manager guy on there, or I forget who, what's his name. But we know there was like a competition or something, and like we're in a band called Down for Five, and Rhino Bucket got one of the days, and we got one of the days. So, and then you guys came back to Tulsa, and we actually did a show at a place called Two Bucks Saloon, which was really cool. It was like a little small, looked like a cabin bar. And so we were cool. We got to open up for you guys and Rhino Bucket and Kix when we saw you guys here in Tulsa.
Yeah, it's a great time. Yeah. Great time for sure. Well, speaking of, let's get into this. So I'm going to put this up on the screen. It's been a little more than a year now that you guys did your final show at Meriwether in Columbia. And as I was putting this show together, I just can't even fathom what it must be like to emotionally process a 43-year career coming to an end with this band. Share some of your memories and most special things that you take away from the show that night and the cap on this amazing run with Kix.
Well, for one thing, they pulled all the stops with the production. I mean, they had everything, flames and confetti and all kinds of junk going on in that that screen behind us. So it made it look special. But it was really cool because, you know, we had an opportunity to have Ronnie come back and play some songs. And we had Brad Divins, and it was just sort of a, you know, it, to me though, Steve picked the set list because, you know, the singer usually does, because he's got to be able to sing the songs and he's not as young as he used to be.
Right.
But if it was up to me, there was a couple songs we left out that I would have loved to have done, but.
Which ones? I'm curious.
Overall, it was cool. And we did these little medley, like Steve called them snippets. We did little short little teasers of a bunch of different songs that we hadn't played in years. So
I'm curious, which ones got left off that you really would have liked to have done?
Well, we did. He picked a lot of the stuff from the first record. I don't know. I would have loved to have done. God, I can't remember the name. We abbreviate the song titles on the set list. That's Wheels in Motion. That's it.
Okay, sure. That's
off the latest album, or
that's a fun one to play, but we didn't do that. And Cold Shower was missing, but I understand Steve didn't want to sing that.
Yeah, that's one of your big ones off of Midnight Dynamite, which was my first album that I got into you guys. Love the album, you know, Bo Hill. But you guys did all the remasters or something, or was it the remixings of the, like, was it called Relit and Reblown, right?
Yeah, both did the helped us out with that.
Do you like the mix on those?
Most of it is cool, but there's a couple of weird things that, especially on Blow My Fuse, cause you know, Tom Werman initially did that, and Bo, he decided to mix that without even listening to the original. Mm. So, you know, there's a lot of like hidden tracks that, like extra guitar tracks that were pulled down in the mix, and he found all that junk and stuck it in different places. And I was so used to hearing, like, say, She Dropped Me the Bomb. I was used to hearing it like the record, and then he did that mix and threw in the extra guitar solo at the beginning and all this weird stuff. But overall, it was kind of cool. It's sort of, it's a remix, so it's kind of good that it's different than the original.
You know, what I find fascinating is how many bands, you know, they put out all these remasters and then they'll remaster them again and again, but not many like actually remix them. And so that's why, you know, how interesting it was to actually go and listen to it remixed, which you said, you know, Tom Werman did the Blow My Fuse album, But then Bo decided to remix that one. Was there any kind of, I don't know, was Tom involved in that at all? Or was it just something he just, a project he took upon himself and didn't care what Tom thought?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, Tom wasn't involved.
Okay. Was the primary driver behind, because I know when both of those were re-released, it was kind of on very key signature dates, you know, 30 years, 35 year anniversary. But would you say the primary driver behind wanting to do the remixing, were you guys not satisfied with the original ones? Did you feel, especially did you feel Blow My Fuse was overproduced with its original version?
The effects that were used on it were a little dated. Mm-hmm. But it's funny because Bo Hill brought up, he came to a show, we played a place in Houston where he lives, and he showed up at the show, and there afterwards he was hanging out with Mark Shanker at the bar, and he's the one who brought up remixing Midnight Dynamite. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, I wasn't there when it happened, but Mark said, he goes, "Oh, but that's a perfect album. How could you remix it?" And Bo says, "Oh, I can top it." So I guess there was little things that bugged him all these years. So he got to.
Okay.
Yeah. The cool thing about that album is, you know, like, that was basically after Out of the Cellar, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many, like, things that are in that album that remind me a lot of things that were in, like, Out of the Cellar, with the electric drums and some of the backup vocal styles, you know, how some of the chants and stuff that you guys did on that album. Was there a conscious effort, do you think, out of him to kind of create, or is that just maybe his style of producing that way? Or what do you think, there was a conscious effort to make another type Out of the Cellar with that?
I think it was kind of his style, and he's kind of in that mode during those years. So several records that he did around that time sort of had the same feel to him.
I wanted to go back a minute to kind of put a cap on that last show with Kix. You talked a little bit about, you know, the songs you guys did, what maybe you would have liked to have done, but as far as the personalities and relationships within the band, did you feel like, and of course bringing Ronnie back for that show had to feel so great, did you feel like everyone left on good terms and you were satisfied with where everything got left personality and relationship wise with that last show?
I think
that's good.
Well, we've always pretty much gotten along. But I remember when Steve decided he was going to call it quits. I don't know if you know this story, but initially Jimmy was going to stop in September, because of health issues. And when he decided to stop, Steve decided that he was going to stop at the same time. And we actually had shows booked through early 2024. And I remember when he first did announce that or told us, I was kind of resistant to it.
Yeah.
And we had to have a Zoom meeting, and we discussed it. And originally we were going to, the last show was going to be Rocktember in Hinckley, the same show that Rhino Bucket did this year. And I remember, I don't know who brought it up, but somebody said, "No, we can't just end in Hinckley, Minnesota."
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why we the compromise was a big show, a big closing show around Baltimore. So, and then once, I don't know, I guess it sort of sunk in after a while, and I kind of understood where Steve was coming from. And at that point, I was still getting over a stroke. So I was struggling, having trouble playing. So in the long run, even though I was bummed, in the long run, it was a good thing because it gave me a break to sort of work on things and get everything back up and running.
Right. And let's face it, when it's been that long, I mean, we see it all the time with professional athletes when it's time to hang up the cleats. You know, it's some of them really struggle with making the decision itself, and then they struggle with life afterwards. Now that it's been a little bit over a year, and like you said, it sunk in. Do you feel like you're in a good place with everything, and you're ready to take on the next adventure in life now?
Yeah, actually, I was ready about 6 months ago.
Good deal, man. Good.
Well, you
But
know, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, yeah, once it happened, now I look back and I'm glad we did it that way.
Okay, great. That's good news. Go ahead,
Okay, well,
Scott.
I was like gonna just add on, like I could probably understand his resentment for that because you know, you go through this period where you're trying to sell these albums when you guys are in your heyday, and everything's going to lawyers, and everything's going to all these people, and you guys are getting a cut of like $500 a week or whatever it was back then. And then nowadays, now, there's hardly any of that stuff, so you guys are probably getting paid way better than you did back then, and it's probably a good sum of income for you. Or,
Yeah.
so it's hard to probably let some of
Well, sure.
that
Yeah, I mean, it's basically it's kind of like losing a job, I would imagine, but we're going to get more into what you've got ahead, 'cause I have a feeling you've got some different irons in the fire. I do want to ask you, your bio on your website is so fantastic. You know, we do these interviews. We've done 114 of them now, and inevitably we sometimes stumble upon Wikipedia. It's okay, but God knows if it's really all that accurate. And then I went to your website, and your bio is so well done. It's really descriptive and kind of just a great snapshot of the timeline of your life and your career. I do want to ask you, though, the first sentence on your bio says you originally wanted to be a garbage man, but the Beatles came along and changed everything. Did you really want to be a garbage man?
In
Did
fact,
you?
to this day, I get up in the morning and I watch the garbage truck come down the street.
Wow, what's your fascination with that? I'm curious.
Well, now I'm probably too old, but when I was a kid, I'd see those guys running after the truck and dumping the thing. But that was back when they had trash cans. They'd
Right.
dump it in the back, and then the truck would take off. And when they went to put the trash can back, and then they'd run down the street and jump on the back. It just looked like so much fun.
That's so cool, man. I mean, I love that. That shows how humble you are. But then the Beatles screwed everything up for you, and then you land in Kix, and of course it seems like it was kind of a fast moving timeline. You know, you guys get signed to Atlantic, you officially become Kix. And I'm curious, you know, you mentioned on your bio that they kind of let you guys be yourselves for that first album, but then here comes the record label, and they kind of force a different direction on you guys with Cool Kids. And talk about the pressures of that time frame, and how being forced to do something that was probably foreign and not quite true to who you guys were. Did that impact the mood and the vibe and the relationships within the band because the pressure was so great to fit that mold?
I don't know if it affected the band itself, but that's sort of the way the record companies worked, or at least they worked back then. Because those songs on the first record we wrote early on, and we've been playing them for years, and they signed us off of a live tape. So they were trying to, they wanted us to capture that energy. And then of course, once they had us, they try to mold us into something. And right. and there was a few factors at the time that we got signed. With one manager, and then after we got signed, we weren't really satisfied with him, and we got Bud Prager involved, who was managing Foreigner. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we figured, you know, Foreigner's on Atlantic, and he's got a lot of pull. And so he between the record company and him, like, you know, he was used to Foreigner writing hit songs, and there's a lot of pressure to write hit songs.
Yeah.
And I remember Donnie came up with all kinds of crazy stuff that didn't make it, but we have some demos. But that one song, Get Your Monkeys Out, that was a weird one.
I loved Atomic Bombs off the first album, and you know, up until probably last few years, Body Talk, like I now love it. Like when I was younger, you know, metalhead kid, you know, I was like, oh, I didn't understand that, but I like it now. You know, I think it's cool now that I'm much older and I can understand how things are. But you know, it's just, that was a quite of a time. I mean, I'm sure you've played so many clubs and so many different places. I want to know about Hammerjacks, because I'm one of those guys that go back in history and learn about, you know, all the clubs that, like, on Sunset and all these cool clubs and everything. Tell me a little about Hammerjacks. Was that like one of your, you know, your home plate, your home, you know,
home base?
Yeah, home base that you guys played at.
Yeah, the Hammerjacks, before it became what it was, they started off in a different location, and they're a lot smaller. And the whole crew from Hammerjacks, they were our fans, and they used to come to the shows. And I remember the first major show we had after we did our record. I don't think the record was released yet. Or it was around that time we opened for Judas Priest and Iron Maiden in Baltimore at the Baltimore Civic Center, and I remember this whole Hammerjacks crew was like this cheering us on. It was really cool, and we, in fact, we did our record release party at the original Hammerjacks, and then when they opened that concert hall, I'm pretty sure we were the first band to play there.
Wow. Now, did you play at the station there in Rhode Island before, you know, the fire and everything? Did you ever play there?
Oh, I'm trying to think. We've played up around there a lot, but I don't know if we played that particular
club. I've always wondered, like, other bands that may have played, like, you know, where Dimebag got shot or something. It's like, oh, I remember that club, you know. It's like, you know, what was that place called? Olorosa Villa nightclub?
Yeah. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but switching gears just a little bit. So again, back to your bio, you know, you talk about how you kind of get back to being more who you guys are at Midnight Dynamite in 85. And then you're in this kind of rinse and repeat cycle of touring and putting out albums, and it goes on like this for years and years and years. I cannot imagine how tough that lifestyle might be. I mean, I know it's probably a lot of fun when you're young, but when you're in that kind of just demanding lifestyle where you've got record people expecting things from you, fans expecting things from you, do you feel like it's those demands and pressures that maybe led to some of the substance issues that some of the guys in the band faced?
Well, you know, I think everybody's got their own individual reasons or excuses or whatever you would call it. Yeah, I guess for me, it was just, you know, when you get done, well, actually, you know, we always had a really good work ethic. Like we wouldn't, it was a kind of a band rule not to drink or do drugs before a show. But then after the show, it was on.
Right.
And I think that's, for me, it was like, I didn't want the party to end.
Right.
And, but you know, it's weird. Like Ronnie got sober in 89 and I, and you know, he went through rehab and yeah. Went to AA and all that stuff. And I stopped drinking at the same time just to support him kind of, and to try out, because I felt like I was getting out of hand.
Yeah.
And so I was just white knuckling it for the last like 4 years I was in the band.
Yeah.
But once I got out to LA and away from those guys, it just all went downhill.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Matter of fact, let's go to that. The bio talks about how you did go to, you end up in jail in 98.
Well, yeah, he expressed that. You were also in that documentary, Nothing But a Good Time, just recently.
Yes. I want to touch on that as well. But so you went to jail in 98. I think that was for drug possession. Then you went to rehab and sober living. And you said this is the best thing that ever happened to you. Why is that?
Oh, it's kind of obvious. I'd be dead if it weren't for that.
Yeah.
But it was at the time, you know, I was just in a bad place, and it seemed like, you know, everything, my life had, you know, turned into a mess, and then getting arrested on top of it just felt like more doom and gloom, but actually that was what saved me. And I don't think, well, the process that I went through, like to get arrested and then, you know, spent time in jail enough to sort of get the drugs out of my system, mm-hmm. and then, you know, have those moments of clarity and then go from jail straight to a rehab. I mean, it was a perfect sequence of events. I would never have planned it that way.
For sure.
But it was exactly what I needed.
That's great, man.
Who approached you to do that documentary, Nothing But a Good Time? Because I thought your parts in it were really good. I mean,
yes,
they were the more serious, you know, I guess Q&A. I'm not sure, but how were you approached to do that?
The guy Tom Bozier is his name, I think. I don't know how you pronounce it, but he got a few quotes from me for the book, and then when they decided to do this documentary, they got, you know, tried to get everybody that was involved in the book to do interviews.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah. Speaking of that, of the seriousness, I did that interview, and then I saw the little snippets of other people, and they're all making jokes and, you know,
right.
Oh man, I was all serious.
Yeah. But you know, it was, your parts is what we kind of like,
yeah,
you know, of course the Robin Crosby stuff too.
Yeah.
But you know, there was like the sad moments in that, you know, where it's like, you know, it kind of brought some tears to our eyes. And so that's why I was like, you know, I really want to reach out to him and get him on our show. And I thought your parts were amazing, because it was just, you know, it, like you said, everyone was kind of cutting up and making fun of this, you know, this and that, but you were just like, hey, you know, this was some serious shit going on.
Yeah.
Out here.
I mean, your segments were the ones that stuck with us, 'cause they were actually substantive and meant something. Don't feel bad. How do you think the Winger guys feel? I think the parts of their interview were only about how Beavis and Butthead wiped out their career. So they may not have been too happy with the finished product on their end, but I mean, as a finished product, were you pretty pleased with how it came out?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Right on.
She brought up Kip Winger, and he played on Midnight Dynamite. Did you remember him coming in? And I guess at that point, he was just kind of a musician guy at that point, right?
Well, he was a friend of Bo's, and he just came down and hung out every once in a while. And he didn't actually play on the record, but he brought a demo, and he wanted Donnie to check it out. And it was, you know,
bang, bang, bang,
Balls of Fire.
Yeah.
It was just the lick, like a two-part lick. And so Donnie took it back with him and wrote a song around it.
Okay.
Cool.
And that was when, I guess, Bo brought in the guitar player, Mike. Was it Slammer? Warrant, the guy who did all the solos on the Warrant album.
Yeah, I don't know how it's pronounced. Is it Slammer? Are we saying that right?
Slammer, yeah.
Okay.
Was there anything personal that went on with, because I listened to a Chuck Shute interview today, and then I guess you were talking about a story when you got locked out of a studio or something like that, and you were hearing him in there playing the solo to Walking Away or Scarlet Fever or something like that, and you finally got in, and I guess they didn't ever approach you to ask about him playing on that song.
Yeah. It was a total surprise. In fact, Scarlet Fever, I arrived like at 10 a.m. because we were working on that song the day before, and Ronnie was originally going to do the solo. It was one of those songs that wasn't quite done when we got to the studio, so we hadn't worked out who was going to do the solo. And I remember Ronnie trying a bunch, like he spent a couple hours in there just trying things, and just wasn't getting anywhere. And then he came out of the studio, and he said, you want to try it? And it was like the last 10 minutes of the session, and I went in there, and it wasn't enough time to really for anything to gel. So I asked Bo for a rough copy of, you know, the basic tracks, and I'd take it back to the room and work on it. So then I came back the next day with a solo, and I was too late. As soon as I got off the elevator, I heard this guy in there playing, and you know, he didn't even warn us. I don't know if Donnie knew about it, but Ronnie and I didn't have a clue.
Boy,
but you know, it bugged me for a long time, but Bo talked to me about it, and you know, I kind of got over it. But what made it a little bit better was Mike was such a nice guy that you couldn't be mad at him.
Wow.
But it wasn't his fault. It was more, you know, Bo's thing.
Yeah, we had Ronnie on, and we talked about that situation with him. And then we had one of the guys from Warrant, and you know, he had to go through the same thing.
That's,
you know,
right. Joey
Allen, and you know, he played basically all the solos on, you know, on those albums, but he had to kind of come to grips with the fact that, you know, he was playing the solos. But they said that, you know, in the long run, it made him better. It made him want to play better, you know, and learn those solos, and now he's, you know, much better guitar player because of it. So
that's cool. Let's get to a couple of viewer comments and questions. Our friend Richard Staser has a question for you. He says, in 2007, you guys were traveling in a little square body RV. How did you survive those trips? We helped you guys load up equipment, and it looked like it was just big enough for guitars, LMAO.
Was that Rhino Bucket?
It had to be, yeah.
Yeah. I remember that thing. Our tour manager, Deamy, owned it. Yeah, had a Winnebago, and we didn't have a trailer up for it, so we just crammed everything inside, like in the aisles and between the beds, and yeah.
You do what you gotta do.
Yeah. In fact, one tour we did in that thing, back when Simon Wright was playing drums. In fact, that was around that time. We did a whole tour it was like a low budget tour, and we were staying at state, whatever, the state parks or something. Mm-hmm. You pull in there, and they have a little bathhouse, and
right.
Yeah. We did a whole tour like that. But it was fun. It was like camping.
That's awesome. And then our friend Travis Arnold, he says, Kix got to open and play for every major band in every major huge arena in New York, and sometimes three times major gigs in a week. The whole time I was in New York, they played so much. It seemed, oh, it scrolled down. It seemed like there were no other local bands in New York, LOL. I love Kix and still have my original vinyl. There's a lot of love for you in here, and we feel the same way. Kix is very influential to both of us.
And you were big. You guys were big in L.A. on the Sunset Strip. Like, they kind of treated you guys like an L.A. strip band at that point at one time. Is that right?
Yeah, well, we actually we didn't play out there until 86.
Okay.
And the first show we did was at the Troubadour opening for Guns N' Roses. And we just figured, and we were the opener. we went on like, I don't know, 8 o'clock or something. And then there was a girl band called Feline that was second, and then Guns N' Roses. So we figured no one knew who we were. So we just did the gig, and it turned out that half the crowd, like there was lying around the block, and half the crowd was there to see us, and they couldn't get in time. We were already done playing by the time they got in.
Wow. You guys have such an energetic set. I mean, from the 80s to even up until you guys, you know, shut it down, you guys have these core, there's like parts on stage where you do these choreography moves and everything. And I don't know who thought of that first for you guys to do, you know, a bunch of your spins together, and how you guys get up on like the, I guess they call this ego boxes, where you and Ronnie will get up on the boxes, or you guys would spin or get on your knees and do your little things like that. Who started all that?
I'm trying to think of exactly, you know, just watching other bands, and you see something that they would do, and you'd go, oh, that's kind of cool. And then we'd, in the early days, we videotaped every show. And then while we're driving from one town to the next, we had a little TV bungee with a bungee cord wrapped around in the middle of the van, and we'd watch those tapes, and like, say there would be a spot where I'd spin or something, and we'd go, oh, that's cool, maybe Ronnie can do that at that point. And then the little sidestep thing we got from that Prince movie, that band The Time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
They did that sidestep. We incorporated that. Yeah, just over the years, all that playing. And yeah, it started out like one guy would do something, and then we'd say, okay, let's make that something. And we'd all do it, or us, or else me and Ronnie would do it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, when we were talking to Ronnie, you know, we brought up, you know, his I guess his sense of fashion, and on how he was always a great dresser. He always looked like a rock star, and you fall right in line with that as well. Both you guys and Kix, you know, of course, all of you guys dressed well, but especially you and Ronnie, you guys had this knack of clothing and scarves and vests, and the way, you know, approach stuff when you guys were doing interviews or just walking around town. What made you, or was it an inner thing, you know, that brought out the, like, hey, I want to dress this way? Was it a certain band that kind of made you go, I want to be, you know, look like these guys? Or,
well, kind of evolved. Ronnie always had something. I remember going to see him play just out of high school, and he was a rock star back then. but for me, it was a long, you know, it kind of evolved, because, you know, I'm a huge Keith Richards fan. Mm-hmm. And I remember in the early days, you can see me, because around that time was Some Girls. And Keith had that punk, kind of punky look with the ripped up t-shirts and stuff. And so I started out like that. And then we went to kind of a Ramones thing where the whole band was wearing leather jackets, and then eventually we just sort of all developed our own thing. And a lot of the glam stuff, I was inspired by Hanoi Rocks a lot.
Yeah.
For that, like Annie McCoy and Keith. And then I went back, like, cause I always loved Keith around 69 to 74, just that period. He was so cool. But when I started, I didn't know how to wrap my head around it. And then finally, I just finally figured it out. And then I always had a sense for it. I mean, I sew and I made my own stuff.
Wow. I think it was, it's an important part. I know some guys, they just really kind of shun the whole, of course, it got, let's face it, it did get over the top with some of the spandex and things like that.
Yeah.
But you don't, I've always heard this said, and I've always kind of agreed, the band shouldn't look like the roadies. You got to go up there with a sense of style, a sense of professionalism, looking like you own the place, I mean, because the crowd's looking up to you, and not only do you want to sound great, you want to look great. So I think it's an important element, and you guys really captured it well.
Well, it's got to be natural too, because
right.
there were so many bands, you could tell they were forced to do it.
For
and
sure.
And they had stylists dressing them, and they just looked uncomfortable.
Totally. I agree with you.
You're a big, big guy on Telecasters. And I guess there's a story where Johnny Depp, that you knew a long time ago, was one of the first guys to introduce you to a Tele. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I already had my Tele that I play now, but I didn't use it live because I figured, it'd be too clean to play live. And then right when we got done Cool Kids, we had a habit of, like, when we were wherever we were recording, right when we get done the record, we try to book a little gig somewhere just to play, because being in the studio for months, we're itching to play. So Johnny Depp was in a band called The Kids, and they're playing this place down in Miami, called the Button South. Mm. And it was like, right around the time we were done recording. So we asked them if they would mind if we came down and got up there and played three songs. And I got to play Johnny Depp's 56 Tele.
Wow.
Through a 50 watt Marshall, which is, what I play through, and I couldn't believe it. It sounded so good. It was just the Tele plugged straight in.
Wow.
And it was like, it just blew me away. And ever since that night, that I decided to, well, it took me a while, but I always had that in the back of my mind.
Mm. It is a cool looking guitar.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
a classic.
It looks good on you too.
It sure does.
It fits you well.
Hey, what other music related questions do you have for Brian? Because before he gets away, I want to ask him a non-music related question.
The food.
Are you ready to get to that?
No. Well, I want to ask him first, because when we did open up for you guys in Tulsa, Simon Wright was with you guys with Rhino Bucket, and I thought that was really cool. AC/DC drummer right there in a small bar in Tulsa. And I actually sat and had a conversation with him that night, and he was really cool and he was funny. What was it like for you to play with Simon Wright?
He's just a good guy. The Rhino Bucket got him to do their third record back in the early 1995 or so. Mm-hmm. And I remember he was in the band then. And I thought, it was cool because Rhino Bucket had that AC/DC sound, then they got the AC/DC drummer.
Right.
So when I joined them around 2000, around 2000, and we had Jackie, who was the original drummer up until around 2006, and she left. And then, and I remember Simon was always like around, like he'd come around and visit, come to a rehearsal or something. And cause him and George were friends. And, so when Jackie left, it was right when Dio was having health issues. And so Simon was available. So we got him in the band. And it was cool. We recorded that album, The Hardest Town, at my girlfriend's house out in LA, where I was living at the time. The whole upstairs was kind of like an apartment. It was a two-bedroom apartment with this big living room space. And so we just converted that into a studio. We had the board in one room, and then we had Simon set up out in the big room. And I remember when he was testing his drums, I was so worried that the neighbors were going to complain. So I remember walking outside and walking up the street while he was testing his drums.
Got a little meter out there.
But actually you couldn't tell where the sound was coming from. It was just this little, I mean, we've soundproofed it really well.
Yeah. That's cool.
Like we put insulation and drywall over the windows and hung all these baffles, and it was crazy. And then we found out that the AC, there was no AC upstairs. Ugh. Because we didn't really use the upstairs, and we had AC downstairs. And so we got the thing all sealed off.
Oh, jeez.
And we're up there just sweating. Oh,
that sounds like our last house, doesn't it? Jeez, that's crazy. Well, before I get to the question about your diet, which fascinates
me. And he's in the kitchen, so this is perfect.
I know. I'm excited to talk about that, but I have to ask one more thing quickly. So other than looking ahead for you, what you got cooking, other than Rhino Bucket stuff, do you have any other musical projects you have going on right now?
Well, I'm doing a benefit show in January with Brad Divins and Shannon Larkin and Bob Perry. But as far as like new projects, I don't have anything. Okay. I'm sort of hoping something will come along, or, you know, every once in a while, like friends of mine will play around here, and I'll go down and sit in for a song or two, but that's about it.
I mean, you're out there in Nashville. There should be tons of gigs out there for you.
Yeah.
But you're probably too busy worrying about, you know, aren't you doing like a cooking show still, or are you still got a cooking show on YouTube anymore?
No, I haven't done that since the pandemic.
Wow. Okay.
Let's talk about that, because again, researching you, wow. I mean, it's obvious that you are a very health conscious man, and that's a good thing to be. I grabbed a picture. This is an example of one of Brian's dinners, and it looks fascinating. And I've noticed, you know, you put a lot of hashtags on the pictures of your meals, and one of the things you say is meat heals. How long have you been, are you on the keto diet, and tell us why you think this is such a healing diet to be on?
Well, I was pescatarian for years, which is basically a vegetarian, but I ate fish. Oh. And it caught up to me like in the late I'm trying to think of what year. I started getting health conscious right when Kix got back together. Mm-hmm. Like when I at first I got sober, and then I started thinking about my health after that. Because I was dealing with sciatica and all this weird, you know, all these residual health issues. Yep. From all those years of abuse. And I remember the first time Kix got back together, and I saw Steve, and he was like in shape. He looked like a young Iggy Pop or something. And I went, man, what'd you do? How'd you do that? And he turned me on, you know, to the P90X at first. So I, you know, I started getting to the exercise part of it, and then I started exploring the nutrition part, and I found out, I mean, I found out all the stuff that all my life I thought was one way was really the opposite.
Wow.
And, you know, cause I was eating low fat and the whole thing, like they, you know, butter's bad and all this stuff. And I found out that, low fat is not good for you. Like you need fat. And I, so anyway, I was still pescatarian, and that's when I started trying the keto diet,
okay,
but pescatarian style. So fish was my protein, but I was eating all these like spinach salads and all this stuff. It was just killing me, and I didn't know why. And it turns out, you know, I mean, spinach is really a rough, especially raw spinach. It's toxic.
Wow.
And I just ruined my guts.
Really?
All those years of that. And then, because that's basically all I'm one of those kind of people that when I find something I like, I just eat it every day. And that probably didn't help. So then I finally, I started stumbling onto all these podcasts about the carnivore diet, like Jordan Peterson and his daughter was on Joe Rogan talking about it, and it got me really curious. Like she dealt with a lot of autoimmune disorders. So anyway, there was around 2018, and it was really weird. And you know, after not eating meat for so many years, the first time I ate some, I like buying it at the store, I almost felt like, I just felt embarrassed at buying it. And it was like weird. And I remember the first time I ate the meat though, all of a sudden my body woke up, my mind woke up, and I thought, man, all these years, like, what was I thinking?
Wow.
And I just had a burst of energy. And so it still took another 6 months to like on and off carnivore. And then I go back to keto. And when I moved to Nashville, I went straight carnivore. And just recently I've sort of been adding vegetables back, but I mostly do, like they have to be well cooked vegetables. Mm-hmm. Like I'll do sauerkraut. Like I just finished a batch. I do it myself, and I do fermented stuff, and I do kefir. I buy raw milk and ferment that. So,
wow.
Yeah. I'm into it.
I hope you don't mind me asking one more question, because I think maybe you can educate me. I have a lot of health challenges myself. I'm a type 1 diabetic, which is that's the same type that Bret Michaels has, which means I'm completely insulin dependent. Now, one of the things that they taught me up front was that I have to have some carbs. And I'm wrestling with that because I'm struggling with weight. And I'm, you know, today I tried some intermittent fasting today. So it, for my life, it's a balancing act of not letting the blood sugar drop too low. But just in experimenting today, I realized that with the intermittent fasting, the blood sugar stayed much more level for a much longer period of time, and I needed less insulin. So in the time that you've spent studying this diet, what would your advice be for someone who wanted to get on it but needed to be extra careful because of the diabetic situation?
Yeah, type 1 is a lot trickier.
Yes.
Like type 2, you can completely reverse it with a carnivore diet.
Wow.
But I've seen some people talking on podcasts about it, like doctors and stuff. It is possible, but what happens is you kind of go low carb, but maybe keep a little bit in there.
Okay.
But but more fat and protein, because that'll even it, even your blood out.
Okay.
In fact, I'm wearing a CGM.
Oh, you sure are. Yeah, I've got mine on too, somewhere up there. Anyway,
I do it just because I'm curious.
Really?
I like to eat and see what different foods do to me. And let me see. Well, I can't find. But anyway, my blood goes just straight across most of the day. There'll be a little bump here and there.
That's how my day was today.
Do you monitor your cholesterol levels and everything with the meats and stuff? Yeah. And you said something about
the statin.
Statins. You called that a death wish. Is that right?
Is that a quote?
I think so. You said that was kind of like, you know, if you get on those, it's kind of like a death wish, you know? Like, well, did you?
Yeah, you know, the doctors are so quick to prescribe that for everything. Like, I had that little mini stroke. They wanted to put me on a statin for that. And it had nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
It's like they're a cure-all, or they just throw those things at everybody.
That's right. And,
I think the only time that they do any good is if someone's already had a heart attack.
Is that right?
But if you haven't had a heart attack, a statin is useless.
Well, see, my doctor put me on one. That's why I wanted to ask you, because I didn't know. And when I heard you talk like that, I got scared. I thought, oh, shit, I'm on one.
But see, this sucks, because does this mean we can't trust our medical professionals? Because, I mean, we all know they are paid to throw pills at us for the cure-all of everything. That's why I'm going off on this rabbit trail with you, because I could tell you knew about it. We're trying to educate ourselves into a healthier lifestyle, and so we're picking your brain about this. But would you advise us to try to get off of those?
Well, you're both on them?
Yeah.
Right, statins? Now? Yeah.
Yep.
She just recently got on one.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the trouble with, a lot of people that are, like, you're type 1, but even type 2 diabetes, actually, statins will lead to that.
Oh, jeez.
You know, in the long run, they cause it. And it's like what they're trying to prevent in the short term, it causes in the long term.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. It's crazy. It, in fact, the whole cholesterol thing is ridiculous.
Really?
The numbers that they expect to keep you at, those numbers are dictated by the pharmaceutical companies.
Uh-huh.
They try to figure out a way to sell more drugs. And so they lowered that down. I think, I don't know what year, I can't remember exactly, but that, just like blood pressure, it used to be, they keep lowering the threshold.
Yes.
And they've done that with cholesterol. And now it's some ridiculous number they expect you. And you need cholesterol, yeah, that's another thing about statins. They inhibit the production of your own natural cholesterol that your liver makes, and that's what your brain lives on, and that's what it can lead to Alzheimer's disease.
Now, if it's like a low like milligram or whatever, if it's like is there a certain amount that's it's like the most more dangerous, or does it
sounds
is
like
it all of it?
Sounds like he's saying it's best to not
because
be on one at all.
If I wanted to get off of it, is that tricky too? Like you know, if you're taking something for so long and then you stop taking it suddenly, or do you have to slowly, like, you know, back off of it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think statins are like that. Okay. It's not like a psych drug or something. But do you know what your cholesterol was? Why they put you on that?
I think it might have been what they call it, the good cholesterol or something like that, was much lower than the bad cholesterol.
He threw me on it because I'm diabetic, and you know, they just throw everything at you once you're diabetic. So
Thing for me was they just, you know, they said it would prevent heart attacks and stuff. And I know my good cholesterol or something wasn't the levels.
I mean, he's telling us it's basically to protect our hearts, right? That was the explanation I got. This makes me sad because now it just makes me feel like we can't trust these guys at all. You know, we just need to study, don't we? We need to study on our own.
Because statins, they lower your LDL, and that's the only thing that they look at, and that's not even the most important thing. The triglycerides are more important. It's the triglycerides and your HDL, like where they sit, it is much more like that tells the story. The LDL is just the only reason they're worried about is because they have a drug for it.
Yeah.
I think we just figured out your next career step. You need to do a health related podcast yourself, because I think a lot of people would learn a lot from you.
There you go. So tell me, what was your favorite country to play in other than the United States?
Oh, wow. Germany.
Cool.
The reason why I asked that, because I watched the Live in Japan thing on YouTube, and I thought the footage and everything was, you looked like you guys were having a blast out there. So I thought maybe you were going to say Japan.
Yeah, that was definitely a good experience. But since then, I Kix never went to Europe except for Japan. I think what we did do Great Britain once back in the day, but we never went to Germany or any of that stuff. And I've done so many tours with Rhino Bucket over there, and the audiences, they're so into it. Especially nowadays, if you play in the United States, you could maybe get booked on the weekends, and then there wouldn't be anything in between. Over in Germany, you can play 7 nights a week anywhere, and it'd be packed.
Wow.
So cool. Well, let's start wrapping this up. You have anything else for him? Otherwise, I think we ought to start cutting him loose.
I'm just glad I got to have a conversation with you, man. I've been a big fan of Kix. Yes. and Rhino Bucket. I used to talk to like Demi, right?
Demi, yeah.
Yeah, Demi on the forum years ago, and he was always so fun to talk to, and he was a really cool guy, and it was cool to meet him and meet you as well, and just wanted to give you props and congratulations on a stellar career with Kix. Yes. and you guys did it, man. You did it right, and now you're out, and so it's time to relax and eat some steaks, right?
Have some duck eggs for sure.
Duck eggs.
Well, Brian, thank you for your kindness and your time, and we wish you all the best, and keep in touch with us.
Yeah. Maybe I'll send you some links to some podcasts and stuff. That would be helpful.
It's definitely time to get educated. So we would appreciate that. Thank you so much. You have a great night.
All right. You too.
Take care, bud. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All
right.
So yeah, his nickname, wow. Damage, Brian Damage.
Yeah, you told me that story, and I didn't know.
Yeah, I think Bo Hill, I think he gave him that nickname, is what I believe he said. Huh. Brain damage, you know, if you'd walk in, you know, hungover, you know.
So he meant it kind of as a negative term a little bit.
Well, I don't know for sure, but I know that he gave him that nickname, and it was, you know, because they used to call, you know, when you're Brian, people would call you Brain. So
that's true. Well, now that I've talked to the guy for an hour, he's probably one of the most intelligent guests we've ever had on here.
It was really cool.
I'm excited to get those links. I know we went off on a rabbit trail there. We don't normally deviate,
but
people
are tuning in.
That's fun stuff. Interesting.
Sometimes that's what these shows are for. It's just to kind of just, you know.
Well, let's face it. We're all getting older, right? We gotta be health conscious and conscience, whatever that word is, and listen to good advice and get healthy. Yeah, that'd be a good thing. Awesome. Well, we talked about, and I want to do it one more time because, again, it was a very generous donation. If bands and artists are out there and you guys are needing sound in the Tulsa and surrounding area, contact our friend Steve Swanson. His sound company is called Swan Sound. You can get a hold of him at 507-319-3605 or email swan, st63@gmail.com for rates and availability. Scott told you at the beginning of the show, we'll tell you one more time, you can always watch us live or replay on YouTube, Facebook, X, and Twitch. And we have our podcast platforms as well, Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeart, Apple Podcasts, and so much more. What you got, Scott?
Oh, no, I'm just like,
you were snapping at me.
YouTube, boom. Facebook, boom. X, Twitch, boom. We're, boom. You know, it's everything.
Right.
But, you know, I encourage people to listen to us on the podcast platforms like Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Amazon and stuff. Just, you know, if you don't get to catch a show or whatever on Facebook or YouTube, then by all means, listen to us in your car, on your way to work.
It's kind of fun. It's definitely a different vibe when you just listen to the audio. I hardly ever watch our replays. Every now and then I will, but every now and then I may pop on the podcast, and it's kind of a different vibe, but it's cool.
You know, one of the things I observed with Kix is, a lot of bands, sometimes they'll put out singles, or they might put one or two on some albums. And mm-hmm. then another album, they may try harder and put out more singles. With Kix, it's like almost every album they put out multiple singles to try to push that. And I always admired when bands did that because it seemed like they didn't give up as soon right. as some of these others. I mean, some bands like the record company be like, well, we're not selling this well, so we're gonna not push anymore, and they're not gonna drop any more money into this project or that this album anymore, and then they just put it on the shelf. But with them, I mean, with their first album, they had like multiple singles, and then the second album they had about three singles, and they always tried to push, and then they had Midnight Dynamite, Cold Shower, Scarlet Fever, and then on the next one it was Cold Blood, Blow My Fuse, She Dropped Me the Bomb, Get It While It's Hot, Don't Close Your Eyes, which was luckily they went with that one.
We didn't get to talk to him about Alan Niven. We'll give you a quick little Kix trivia here. Alan Niven, if you watch that Nothing But a Good Time documentary, you'll see him on there. He's a legendary manager, and he was very instrumental in talking Kix's record label into getting them to release "Don't Close Your Eyes" as a single. They were about ready to give up on the album and stop investing in helping the guys promote it, and so Alan talks them into releasing that. They release it, and of course it launches Kix into the stratosphere. So I'm sure the Kix guys love them some Alan Niven. I'm sure they do. We want to give a quick shout out. We've got good people in here: Travis Arnold, Leslie Richard, Timothy Hughes, Steve Stefanoff. He came in here. He says, "I remember Rhino Bucket played at $2 in 2007. Yeah, that was a fun night.
That was
sure.
when we were there.
That was the night. I think a lot of us remember that. But good times, man. Really a great episode, great interview with Brian. We really appreciate him coming on. I think it's time that we get out of here and go watch us some foosball.
Let's do it.
Don't you?
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll be announcing our next guest here soon. Just stick with us. When you see us live, hit that notification bell. They'll let you know when we're live, or just, if you see us advertising it and promoting it, just put us on a reminder. And thank you for checking in with us and hanging out with us, And of course, we're always on YouTube, and you hit subscribe. And all of our replays are always on our page, on our Tulsa Music Stream Facebook page. And of course, all of our stuff is on YouTube as well. We appreciate you guys, and thank you so much. We'll see y'all next time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you guys for your support. Have a great night. See you next time on Tulsa Music Stream. Good night.